The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
George Saunders is the author of countless short stories. He's really one of the great writers of our time and a huge influence on younger writers. His work is very funny and also very sad. And at the center of it is a deep concern with human morality, how the world constantly gets in the way of our desire to be good spouses, good neighbors, and good colleagues, even good presidents.
So this is George Saunders, and I'm in my office at Tully Hall in the scenic Syracuse University campus. And right outside my window behind me, there's a beautiful statue of a seated Lincoln. It's called the Mystic Lincoln. So for the past 5 years, I've been working on this novel called Lincoln and the Bardo. And this statue has just been kind of a constant reminder that I have that at home to work on. And kind of also a bit of a physical embodiment of the kind of ethos of the book, which is Lincoln kind of at his lowest, you know, the most sad, the most defeated. It's 1862, the war is going terribly. They're just realizing it's not going to be a short thing. And, you know, these reports are coming back of thousands of people dead in a single day. And at this moment, his favorite child dies at 11, kind of unexpectedly, of typhus. And he was so heartsick, according to newspapers at the time, that he actually went back to the graveyard one night alone and held a body. So the book is kind of set on that night.
So his hands are crossed, kind of in his lap. And he looks like he just came from court, maybe. He's kind of dressed up. He's got his bow tie on, no beard. And he's sitting with his knees slightly apart, his hands between his knees. And his eyes are cast down at about, you know, a spot a few feet in front of himself in what looks to me kind of like almost like a meditative posture. I've heard that it's the only sad sculpture of Lincoln that exists. And he looks kind of contemplative and a little sad, a little bummed out. And he just looks kind of like he's working through something. But maybe, you know, it's funny, there was, you think of the Rodin, the thinker, and that guy is working it. You know, he's kind of hunched over and he's looks a little constipated. And this is a different kind of a thinking. He seems to be kind of there, you know, to receive thought, but not pushing it too hard. You know, he's letting the solution kind of work its way up through himself a little bit. At least that's how I see it. I don't know. He might be asleep for all I know. In truth, the meaningful thing about this was that it was like a physical embodiment of this secret project that for about half the time I wasn't sure would work. So I can remember kind of walking by and going, I'm trying, you know, I'm doing my best. You know, the book is about the night that Lincoln went to the crypt and held his son's body a couple nights after he was buried. So the book sort of became, an exploration of how do we function when everything's really broken? The country's turned against him. He really is losing the war. So his son died, and it was kind of connected with a party that they had thrown. The kids were sick, and they went ahead with the party anyway. So when the kid finally did pass away, there was a lot of chatter about the bad parenting of the Lincolns and the ambition and so on. So your son dies, you have a feeling that you maybe helped it along, maybe. Then you're so grief-stricken, you hold the body. Well, the next day he went into the office and he signed some big bill changing the currency or something like that. So he had some way of enduring hardship. And it was really interesting to think about what would one do in that situation where every vestige of defense that you would build up would crumble under your feet? There's nothing he could claim for himself, really. And yet, as we know, he went on. So it was funny how, as the book started to become that story, I would look out and he would be in exactly the posture that I would imagine him being at the graveyard, and exactly in the kind of the frame of mind. He looks a little bit like somebody who's just been beaten at something, you know, just lost something. You know, I'd never really wanted to write about Lincoln. It's like, who wants to write about Lincoln? It's like writing about Jesus, you know, it's too hard. You know, you're trying to avoid 4 score and 7 minutes ago I came into this graveyard, you know. But it's funny how there is, you know, I think one of the reasons people love him, I think it has to do with you get the sense anyway, he's just working through these things on a really high moral ethical level by his own lights, you know, which is really something moving about that he could change the world just by reasoning his way through it, you know. The thing about Lincoln that's remarkable when you read through that period, he always seemed to have, in a moment of crisis, to keep his eyes up on the higher things. So, there was a point where things were getting really ugly, a lot of casualties and no progress either way. So it looked like it'd be a 20-year war of attrition. And there was some talk about a peace deal. And one of the conditions was the Emancipation Proclamation would be struck down, the slaves would be returned, and he wouldn't do it. It wasn't political, it wasn't expedient, but he had spoken to some of the black veterans who had fought, and he's just like, we can't do it. It's not possible. You know, at a moment when it's sometimes the eternal verities seem trivial or they seem impossible, that's the time to double down on them. You know, so if we believe that love is the answer, it is. And if we believe that vigilance is necessary, then it is. I think Twain said, you know, an untested virtue is not a virtue. You know, we like it to be tested in miniature so we can always win. You know, we can always be confident of who we are. And I mean, we don't like ambiguity. We don't like this feeling right now because it's so uncertain. Not only is it uncertain what's going to happen, but our place in it is uncertain. And I guess what I see in his posture is somebody who knows that there's no autopilot. There's also something about him being all right with how things are at the moment. We're inclined to think that if we're sad, we've messed up or we've lost or we've been shown to be incorrect. But in a lot of Eastern teachings, the, you know, sadness is, that's right. Yeah, you know, you're dying and you're inept while you're here and you're failing at love. And why wouldn't you be sad?
George Saunders is the author of several books of short stories and a new novel called Lincoln in the Bardo. He spoke with us from the statue of Lincoln outside his office in Syracuse, New York. Bardo, by the way, is a term, I looked it up, from Tibetan Buddhism that means something like limbo, a state between life and death.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.